This is Marginalia, a production of KMUW Wichita.
Marginalia. Notes in the margin of a book.
Notes, commentary, and similar material written in the margin of a book.
Comments and notes which are incidental
or additional to
the main topic in the margin of a book.
In a note to her reader, author Lauren Fox writes, "Children of immigrants are anthropologies of our own families. We're participant observers of cultures we live in, but that will never quite belong to us." Fox's new novel, Send For Me, introduces us to four generations of women inspired by her own family. The book explores the powerful bonds of family, of those surrounding us and those left behind. I recently spoke with Lauren Fox about her historical fiction. I'm Beth Goulet, this is Marginalia, and here's our conversation. Your book is titled Send For Me, and let's set it up for our listeners. Clara, Annalise, Ruthie, and Claire, who are these four women?
So they are four generations of mothers and daughters. Clara and Annalise are in Germany in the 1930s. Ruthie is Annalise's daughter. Annalise and Ruthie end up moving to Milwaukee as things become untenable in Germany as the Nazis rise to power. And Claire is Annalise's granddaughter, born and raised in Milwaukee, and that thread of the novel takes place in present day.
And so the novel follows all of these women and all of these families through, you know, 1930s to present day. But what I found interesting, there are some interstitial snippets of letters included throughout the book.
Yes.
And I understand that these are excerpts of letters that you found written by your own great-grandmother?
That's right. About 25 years ago, my grandparents had recently died and they had been living with us in the years before their deaths, and their belongings from their apartment were in my parents' basement. So I was going through some stuff one day, and I came upon this box of letters. Not only were they written in German, but they were written in this old-fashioned German script that very few people can read. So to me, they were completely illegible. They looked like knife scratches on paper. But I just knew as soon as I laid my hands on them that they were special and that they were sort of, it was such a vivid moment for me finding them. I still remember the little wooden box they were in and the pink ribbon that was tied around them. I just knew that they were going to be kind of important and they were going to answer some questions that I had about my family. So I managed to get them translated. I was a graduate student at the University of Minnesota at the time, and I found a professor there who could read the letters and who took a personal interest in the story. So there are about 75 letters in the box, and I would go to his office every week with a couple of letters, and he would read them out loud to me into a little microphone, and I would take them home and transcribe them. So the whole process took about a year. And throughout that year, I just sort of gradually pieced together my family's history. I took the letters and I pored over them and I edited them down to sort of, you know, the most important elements of them, and I ended up using them in this book, weaving them throughout the story.
In addition to spanning four generations, you also span two continents, which you mentioned. Annalise and Ruthie were able to leave Germany for Milwaukee. Clara could not, and the family was separated. And I understand you were partially inspired to tell this story because of the Trump administration separating immigrant families at the border. I read that in an article. Is that true?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I think we were all so stunned and when that happened and those images and stories came to light. And there's just no way to process those horrors. And I just remember thinking at the time, I guess our family story is kind of still relevant. I mean, unfortunately, I've been thinking about this story and how it is, you know, it's been such a huge part of my life. But suddenly, when these family separations came to light, the past kind of collided with the present for me.
There was a point in the book when Claire was describing the notion of a childhood home, and you wrote, "It was the house of Usher, no matter how well loved you were." Talk to me about this idea.
Well, my parents are still in the house where I grew up. And, you know, it's just filled with, like, the embarrassing detritus of my childhood. So that is kind of ripped from the headlines. I sort of feel like, I mean, I haven't been inside my parents' house in almost a year now. And I just, you know, I really miss that feeling of walking in there. And just, you just never know what weird thing you're going to be confronted with. Or, like, I open one of my old dresser drawers and just what sort of strange relic from my childhood is going to pop out and just remind me of all kinds of like lovely, horrible, embarrassing things. It's your psyche, you know, I mean, I feel lucky that my parents are still in that house, but it's like your psyche on display.
I thought you did such a great job of illustrating how sometimes a thing can have such significant meaning for one generation, and it barely receives a passing glance from the next. And I'm thinking specifically about the table or even the ashtray. Can you talk to me a little bit about that?
So I wrote in the book about how a lot of the dishes and the porcelains they brought over from Germany didn't survive the trip. And so the Aid Society gave them these dishes with cabbage rose borders that Annalise hated. She kept them, but she hated them because they were not, you know, the beautiful china that she'd grown up with. And I sort of made a passing reference to when Claire is going through their things in her family's basement, she sees these dishes with the beautiful cabbage rose border that she loved. I just think, you know, things have personalities and they're so weighted for us. And, you know, I have in my kitchen the coffee maker that my grandparents had in their house. They probably never thought twice about it. It's a German coffee, like a, you know, it's just on display in my kitchen. I don't use it. They probably never thought twice about it. It's a, like a lovely little blue and white coffee maker that says cafe on it. And it was just probably like something they used and didn't think about. And to me, it's kind of magical. It's such a remnant of my, you know, the apartment that my grandparents lived in. I think things have resonance and that changes as they're passed down to us.
Well, and even in the reverse order, because I'm blanking on his name now, but he kept that table as a sign. And then there was a reference in the book where they hired some teenagers to drag that splintered table to the curb.
Well, if you're not told the story of the thing that's passed down to you, then it loses its significance.
Right. So we focus a lot on the four generations of women, but the men were also noteworthy, and not only the family of these four women, but you also included love interests as well. Were any of these gentlemen based on family or men you know?
I definitely focused on the mother-daughter bonds and the complexity of those as I was writing the book. The men in the story are, it's so hard to answer whether they're based on men, I know, because they sort of, you know, as a fiction writer, they are and they aren't, you know, like I was trying to like, I was thinking like, what is it, 50-50, 60-40, but that's sort of an impossible, you know, percentage to create. But they're, the two significant men in the book are Annalise's father, Julius, and her husband, Walter. They're the most significant. I come from a long line of really lovely men. Just I feel really lucky, you know, because I feel like the previous generations of men had a lot of, you know, baggage about masculinity. But I'm just really lucky in my family. The men are just sort of tender and soft. And so they're not, the men in the book aren't really exactly based on the specific personality traits of men I know, but that sort of general, like, loveliness.
Well, and I apologize. And I knew it was a dumb question when
it's not.
But I didn't quite
not at all.
And I was intrigued with, and I'm blanking on the friend's name.
Max?
Yeah, I think
or,
so.
The, no, no, or Oscar?
The, yeah, Oscar.
Okay.
And just that whole, the friendship or whatever it was toward the end of the book. I found that it was a departure in a way from the story of these four women, but not. I mean, it was his own side story, but it just, I just really like the way that you wove everything together. So
I thought a lot about what to do with that storyline. Like, it felt really important to me. It's not, you know, Annalise does not, I don't want to give away any spoilers,
right,
but she doesn't have a love affair with Oscar, but she loves him and they're like an important part of each other's lives. And they sort of dance on the edges of the relationship being almost inappropriate, but not. It just felt it added color and shade to the story for me.
Yeah. So descriptions of your previous books note your wry humor. While Send for Me is more serious, I still found myself laughing out loud. And there was one instance where you wrote this about Claire. She picked up a flat stone and tried to skip it, a skill she had never mastered but always thought she might, similar to how she secretly suspected she might be a psychic, but it just hadn't surfaced yet. Was it difficult to find the right balance between comedy and tragedy?
I mean, the present-day narrative, I had more fun with, because Claire feels the closest. She's sort of the closest to me in the book. She's my, you know, she parallels my story to some degree, and she's of my generation, so I felt like I could sort of have a lighter touch with her. So I don't know if it was difficult to find the balance between comedy and tragedy. It just felt like natural to be a little more, to allow a little more humor to creep into that storyline. Also, I do secretly think I'm psychic, but there's no evidence of that. I also think I have a beautiful singing voice, even though all evidence to the contrary. I just think someday it's going to come out.
That's funny. You know, I just interviewed Tom Vanderbilt, who wrote a book called Beginners. And he, one of the things, the skills that he tried to achieve as an adult was singing. So you should check that out.
Oh, yeah. I went to college with him.
Did you really?
How did that go for him? Can he sing?
He didn't sing for me, but I think, I think he was saying that all, you know, any of us with practice get better. So,
mm-hmm, yeah. I don't think so, but
that's funny. So in your acknowledgments, you talked about growing up near your maternal grandparents and you asked them a question you regretted as soon as the words escaped your mouth. Talk to me about your question and your grandfather's answer.
So I was in their kitchen. I remember this. It's just one of those moments that is just, you know, seared in my memory. I was in their kitchen. My grandmother had her back to me. She was cooking, and my grandfather was sitting at the table. And I wanted to know, I had wanted to know for so long, and I was just afraid to ask. I said, "Do you ever want to go back to Germany?" And, like, the whole, the sort of air changed in the room, and my grandmother didn't say anything. And my grandfather, after a while, just kind of chuckled softly and said, "No." I just, you know, they didn't really tell me much about where they had come from and what the experience had been. And I think, you know, years later, my sense is that they were trying to protect me, you know, from sadness, which, of course, doesn't work. But they were trying to keep me safe, you know, psychologically as well as physically. And also, I think, you know, it was just something they wanted to put behind them. I mean, we're so different now. Like, we want to process and we want to talk about. But, like, trauma is, you know, its own thing. And I just think they, it was just something that they didn't want any part of now that they were in this new country with, you know, they were safe. They had a family, and it was just, I could tell. I mean, I was kind of stumbling over this answer because it was so, like, it was such a huge part of my childhood that I had these questions, but I just knew I couldn't ask them.
We're recording this on January 29th. And 2 days ago was Holocaust Remembrance Day.
Right.
And as we talked about, this story spans four generations. Yet as I was reading, it was the early stories that felt the most timely. Just like family separations, we are still dealing with anti-Semitism. What are your thoughts on that? And also, you know, on Holocaust denial.
I mean, that was part of it. It was in my mind as I was writing this book, my sense that I needed to have a strong allegiance to the truth. That's part of the reason I didn't change a word of the letters from my great-grandmother, because I feel like in a world where Holocaust denial exists, which is inconceivable to most of us, but obviously we can see, as we saw a couple weeks ago in the Capitol riots, we can see it's still there. It hasn't, you know, it may have gone underground, but it's still there, along with its cousins, racism and, you know, all the ugliness. It's like, it's our job to shine a light on it.
Do you see more historical fiction in your future, or was this special because it was your history?
I don't know. I've been thinking about that a lot lately. I really loved doing the research because it was hard and, you know, sad, but I really loved the process of researching. Didn't think I would, and I had never considered historical fiction before, but immersing myself in a time period that is not our own was really satisfying, and it really opened up, gave me a lot of confidence as a writer, and it sort of opened up my imagination. So there's a good chance that I'll continue writing historical fiction or zombies. I don't know yet.
That was Lauren Fox, author of the book Send For Me, which was published by Knopf. Thanks for joining us for Marginalia. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave a review. Marginalia was produced at KMUW Wichita. Our engineers are Mark Statzer and Torin Anderson. Our editor is Luann Stevens, and I am the producer. This is Marginalia, and for KMUW, I'm Beth Golay.